is a special report.
Knowing how to invest your money is harder than ever before. Dealing with stock market volatility, record debt, and terrorist attacks requires new thinking. At U.S. Asset Management, we can help you see the world more clearly so that you can move beyond the chaos and invest with confidence. Call us, visit us online, or drop by our office. U.S. Asset Management, helping you make better decisions with your money.
Hi, everybody. I'm Christine Dolan, and this is our Globalist in Plain Sight show every Sunday since May of 2022. And today we're delighted to have Dr. Sheila Furey, who's the founder of the Medical Freedom Alliance in the state of Virginia, the Commonwealth of Virginia, I should say, here in the United States. Sheila, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Christine.
All right. So you're a psychiatrist and you have clients who were children and you've seen the impact. Folks, today we're going to talk about the impact of COVID on children, the impact of COVID on families, and also what is next, because we know that they're looking at the avian flu. We hear about monkeypox, but we also hear about the avian flu and the preparations for it. And Sheila knows a lot about that. So Sheila, let's first talk about your background in terms of your qualifications to understand the impact here.
So I'm a child and adolescent psychiatrist, and I work primarily with children who have learning disabilities. And so I evaluate and treat children and adults who have suffered from learning disabilities, dyslexia, other learning disabilities, and in particular, autism. And so in that community and in the mental health community, depression, anxiety that affects children and adolescents as well as adults. And so I have a private practice in Virginia, and what I've seen and what I was really concerned about from the beginning of COVID was the isolation, and in particular, what happened when they shut down our schools. So what we've seen globally, or in particular in the United States, and in particular in the city of Richmond where I'm at, is the prolonged period in which students were out of school. And that this was a total disruption of their development. And it was even further disrupted when we put the blame on children for illness. So if we wanted children who were at no risk to die from COVID, all right, the 0% risk, all right, yet we wanted to tell children that if they didn't get vaccinated, they were the cause of grandma or grandpa or mom or dad dying from COVID. All right. Never in the history of medicine have we blamed children for the death of someone else. All right. Particularly children who were not getting ill. If they got ill, they rapidly got over the illness. In fact, some kids were over it in 24 hours. They would test positive. They would be sick in the morning. And by the afternoon, the fever was gone. They were outside playing. And the parents were concerned and saying, you know, do I keep them quarantined? All right. Because they tested positive. And they wanted to keep the kids inside in a bedroom. And, you know, let's go back to when I was a child. If you were sick and you were a fever, you laid down, you took a nap. And if you woke up and you were better, mom sent you outside to play. And yet all of those rules were thrown out the window. Common sense was no longer common sense. And people were questioning what to do. So even in the school system, after they went back to school, if a child was exposed to someone in the classroom who tested positive for COVID, then that whole classroom was out of school for 14 days. All right. So repeatedly, one student after another could be out of school for 6, 8, 9, 10 weeks because of repeated exposures. And then when they were at home with their parents, they wanted them to quarantine. And so parents would call me and say, does this quarantine mean that they can't go outside and play? What are we supposed to do? And so
let me ask you this. It wasn't just the parents that were calling you. You actually have clients who are children and teenagers.
Correct.
So was that showing up in your conversations, in your counseling?
Yes, absolutely. Because
what is it that the kids were hearing? They were hearing that they had to get the shots because of grandma, protecting grandma and grandpa?
Correct. There was significant fear, particularly among adolescents who had grandparents who were ill, or parents who had asthma, COPD. They feared that if they got COVID and brought it home, they were going to be the sole person who was responsible for their death of their parent or grandparent.
Who was giving them that information?
That information was coming from the general public and from what was going on in the news. The push to vaccinate, particularly when they wanted to vaccinate, they kept lowering the age of vaccination. So, first it was adults, then it was we're going to do 12 and above, now 5 to 12, and then 5 and under. All right. And at each stage, that the fear porn that was existing, the spread of this, you could do nothing to protect yourself. There was no treatment. The only way to get through this was to vaccinate. And then after they vaccinated, they got COVID, all right? So that everything was a misnomer. And the kids in particular wanted things to go back to normal. And when you have government officials saying that you must take this vaccine if you want to participate in sports, if you want to do anything extracurricular activities at your school, this is required. And yet the whole looking at what are the side effects, what are the potential downsides of this? This is an emergency use only vaccination. What are the long-term consequences? None of that was explained to people. It was simply, here's the carrot. If you get this, we'll return to normal. Or we're going to have a pizza party and everybody can have pizza who's vaccinated. I actually had a student at one of the colleges that I talked to said that in her high school, the teacher in the class said, I want to know who's not vaccinated. So one person raised their hand, and then they said, you need to justify why you are placing the entire rest of this class at risk for such a dangerous illness.
It's so insidious. There's a congressional report that just came out, and Sheila, I know that you're at a conference, this week, but you may not have seen it, but it is a congressional report on the $1 billion that the US government has spent for the rollout. And we know that the narratives didn't, this is what they found, that the push on safe and effective was not true. They didn't want to cause a vax hesitancy. And we know, for instance, that the neurological and the vascular injuries have not been officially recognized by the FDA, Dr. Peter Marks, and to date, I should say. And we know that the NIH has had blood from vax injured with neurological studies going back as early as January of 2021. So the whole thing has been a lie. The saddest part is that the public has embraced it and then repeated it like parrots out there, causing this kind of harm and the impact on kids. What's the long-term impact that this is going to have on children?
Well, we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg, particularly with the younger kids that were masked. So when you consider how important language development is, and then you put a mask over not only the face of the teachers, their peers, their parents, but of themselves, all right? How are they going to learn proper speech and language development, but also the affect that goes along with speech and development? So you are learning emotional content with or emotional implications with language. And when you can't see most of the face, children get a confused picture. And so we had young children. I see children now who are still masked. All right. This is so disturbing to me. And I consider it absolutely child abuse. All right. But these parents are absolutely convinced that they have to do this in order to protect their children. And what we know from some of the studies that just having a child wear a mask all day increased their risk of respiratory illness, right? Increased their risk of anxiety, increased their risk of depression. And there were children that I evaluated that were having panic attacks because they were in school with a mask all day long. And yet all of this was minimized. And the schools wanted, you know, we want medical professionals to evaluate you so you can be out of a mask. When there's the mask was doing nothing to protect children, the families. I mean, you could smoke through a mask. All right. So how is it going to stop a viral particle if it's not going to stop, you know, you from inhaling on a cigarette or other device? And yet so, this was the propaganda that was perpetuated over and over again.
So we have on tape now, Steve Crowder has it as about a month ago or more. This would have been, I think, it was the day that the story dropped about Olivia Nunzi and Bobby Kennedy and Ryan Lisa, her boy or ex-fiance. But it was a tape of the advisor to Mayor de Blasio in New York City. And he said, he's a doctor, he's from Cornell, he's married to another doctor. I think she was a pediatrician. But he said undercover, he was filmed, that here he was locking down New York City, but he and his beloved, his wife, were participating in orgies in the basement of Wall Street Bank. Basements or something in private clubs. So the hypocrisy and what the hypocrisy was just overwhelming. But he also said that they were making it as difficult as possible to get people to conform to the behavior that they wanted, which was to take the shot. They didn't want to have any vax hesitancy. So they wanted to basically be the fear porn guys out there. That if you don't do this, you're going to die. If you're unvaccinated, you're contributing to the deaths of everybody else, which is a guilt trip, and it's not based on facts. And he also admitted that they knew that they didn't have the vaccinations weren't going to stop the transmission. I mean, to me, that's one of the most alarming lies that's out there. They were not safe and effective for everybody. But they were never going to stop the transmission. And I know I talked to some people in Fauci circles after the first rollout, and I asked them, so what do you think of the rollout at the time? And Dennis Carroll said to me point blank, he said to me that they had to work better on their message, saying that it was safe and effective and it prevented transmissibility of the virus, which we all know that was in June of 2021. And we all know that the breakthrough happened, you know, 6 weeks later, the end of July and in August. And then in September is when, you know, the Biden and the corporate world wanted to make the vaccinations mandated. So what do we do with this? Because, I mean, you're the one that's got the psychology degree. How do you unravel the lie to minimize the impact of the lie that has been so seared, you know, into our culture?
So I just begin on a one-to-one basis and have them recognize reality. And for many of them, it's following the timeline in their own illness. So did you get COVID before the shot? No. You got shot one. What happened? I got COVID. I got shot two. I got COVID again. The doctor said, because I've had it twice, I should get a booster. They get a booster. Now they've had COVID four, five, and six times. All right. Then we're looking at the neurologic and cardiac illnesses that are occurring because of the shots. And the sad part is the mainstream medical community is not even getting a true history of the patient's illness. So if we go back and we begin saying, okay, how did you fare in 2020? How did you fare in 2021? When was your first shot? When was the first time you got ill? All right. Mm. What? So they're not even asking questions related to the vaccine when they're seen by their primary care. The primary care says, okay, we'll look at the medical illnesses that you're having, but they see no correlation between the medical illnesses that they're experiencing and the direct relationship time sequence to the vaccine schedule that they've had. Further, what's really disturbing to me is the rate, alarming rate of turbo cancers. I get approximately one call a week with someone who's diagnosed in stage three or stage four of cancer. And these are young people, 40s, 50s, early 60s. People who have been in remission from other cancers are now in stage three, stage four cancer again. So this is very alarming to me, and in particular, women. So one of the studies that was done by the American Breast Cancer Group for women with cancer under 45. So prior to 2020, all right, we saw a rate of about 20 to 25,000 cases a year. In 2023, it was 250,000 cases of breast cancer in women under 45. All of this is being suppressed by the mainstream media. Early in the pandemic, when college women were reaching out to one another about menstrual dysfunction, of course, you know, the stakeholders and the public-private partnership, okay, the Gestapo said, we have to stop those Facebook posts. So all of these women who had a source of support and were looking to one another for support and for guidance about how they were treating their menstrual dysfunction, well, we have to stop that because that's all mis and malinformation. This is incredible, all right?
So let me ask you something, Sheila. When we deal with this level of cognitive dissonance, okay, but basically it's propaganda, all right? We're living in a world where it's reality versus unreality, where people are being said, the naked butt of the king doesn't exist. And you and I know, no, the king has no clothes on. All right. We're able to do that. What is it about the public that they're not able to do it? Is fear such a major factor with people, or is it the intimidation that they're going to be locked out of the club? I mean, it seems to me that if something's going on with somebody's health, you know it to be true. You know your own body, all right? So if somebody tells you it's in your brain, when Todd and I did some of the early the interviews of the COVID vax, this is starting in January of 2021. And when I got them to go on camera, it was during the summer when we released them in August of 2021. But in some instances, the COVID vaccine injured would tell me that there were colleagues of theirs that they would see, and they were so upset by the injuries because there were multiple injuries, but they were also upset by their colleagues' reaction to them. And in some cases, they didn't know which they were more upset about. The fact that their colleagues would say, this is all on your head, when in fact they knew because they were in the healthcare providing industry that knows something was going on with their bodies neurologically, or vascularly, or both, or cardio, multiple injuries at the time. But people would actually say to them, no, it's all in your head. What do people do with that kind of, because it's maddening, okay? It's maddening. Either these people are stupid or it's an intentional lack of curiosity, or they're afraid because it might be linked to the vaccination. And then they have to, you know, shift their paradigm of reality in terms of the medical profession. What are we dealing here with? I mean, are these people stupid? I mean,
I think
choosing to be stupid?
I don't think they're stupid. I think they're many of them, it is too dangerous for them to admit the truth, even to themselves. All right.
Why is it dangerous? Tell me why that's dangerous.
Because then you have to accept a certain amount of responsibility, particularly for physicians. All right. So when you have been indoctrinated, and literally we have been indoctrinated. All right. So from the entire childhood vaccine schedule forward, all right, these are all safe and effective. There are no problems. And if there is a side effect, it's a rare instance. That's what we're indoctrinated with. And so anyone who potentially has an injury from a vaccine or has, you know, an injury from the COVID shots, all right, that's a rare instance. Or it's just a coincidence, okay? You were always going to have MS. It just happens to coincide with you having some shots. But we don't think that those shots have any relationship to do with why you're diagnosed with MS now, or why you have a cardiac arrhythmia. So, and they take that narrative and they keep going, all right? Because to risk looking down the rabbit hole, all right, is they know what happens to other physicians. You know, they've seen the physicians who have been, their licenses have been taken away, that they're taking their board certifications away, and they're so fearful of going outside of the system because the system has said you will not be able to earn a living if you don't play ball with us.
We're talking about self-survival preservation.
Correct. For some of them.
For some of them. And then, so we're talking about a lack of moral courage. But here's the larger question that I have. This was the people that were targeted on the planet was almost 8 billion people, whatever the number is of the people that are alive on the planet. And we had a certain amount of courageous doctors that went up against it and said, hey, hydroxychloroquine, you know, ivermectin. And we know that the governments in this country, they didn't just dissuade people from using that. They actually took the supply off and put it in the national stockpiles. All right. So there was a concerted effort to, again, say that the king is fully clothed and he's not butt naked. All right. So that's a sense of people knowing that something's not available. They know that there's a game in place. But why do people think these people are so powerful? Because the one thing that I know about traffickers, and it doesn't matter whether it's medical traffickers, organ traffickers, sex traffickers, labor traffickers, they are cowards underneath it all. They're narcissistic. They think they're all powerful. But once you expose them and you name them and you shame them, they don't know how to cope. And it's almost, I keep on waiting for that tipping point in our society where these guys really understand the gig is up.
I agree with you. And what we have to, and I think there's sort of the revolution is occurring, and it's occurring at a grassroots level, in that it is the patients who are saying, I'm not going back to my doctor. Mm-hmm. It's the patients who are saying, I don't trust my doctor because they don't listen to me. That when you have, as a psychiatrist, okay, when I have my patients call me, they've just been to their primary care and they say, this is what my primary care told me. They want me to start on X, Y, and Z drugs, or they want me to take these shots. I'm fearful. And their question, when they begin to question, and these are ordinary people who said, I have never questioned my primary care doctor in my life. And now I don't want to return to their office, or I'm afraid to go for my yearly checkup. That's where the revolution begins. And that they're looking for alternative medicine practices. And I ask many of these patients, what was it like for you before? All right. What was it like for you when you grew up? Because many of us, particularly in our 60s and 70s, we never went to the doctor as kids.
No, we didn't.
We didn't go to the doctor. You went for stitches and broken bones, and that was it. And so when you get them to reflect and you get them to begin in small steps, not listening to the narrative, and they realize when they don't listen to the narrative and they go outside and they smell the fresh air and they're like, yeah, this is where it's at. Because if I'm in my home and I'm focused on what's the latest piece of propaganda and believing it or researching it, you know, trying to fact check the CDC, not an easy thing to do, all right, for a common person. But when you get them outside or you look at just basic things, and I call it the weather, all right, because, you know, the weather forecast is designed to terrorize you, okay? It's always the next worst thing. And having grown up in Iowa in Tornado Alley, you know, you just lit, okay, this is a reality. When there's a tornado, you simply go to the basement, all right? Mm-hmm. And you didn't rely on the government if a tornado went through your community to fix anything. You relied on your neighbors. And so people are beginning to see on a large scale that the government who creates the problems is not the entity that is going to fix the problems. They're just going to compound them. And as that occurs over and over again, people are waking up. I think that's very true of what happened with Hurricane Helene, what happened in Virginia and North Carolina and Tennessee and all these communities. It is the people and people working together that are helping these people, not the federal government, not the state government. And that's what's important.
All right, we're going to take a break. On the other side, let's talk about the next pandemic that these people were planning on, which is the avian flu, because I find it just fascinating how they think that they're going to get by with this.
Do you really trust her to run this country for the next 4 years? How have the last 4 years gone under him? While your tax dollars are being funneled overseas and to support illegal immigration, they've left our people behind, offering just $750 in aid as if that's enough. With political insanity that we're living through, supply chain shortages, natural disasters, and the looming threat of another pandemic, you need to prepare your family now. The Wellness Company offers 5 critical medical kits packed with life-saving medications like ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, amoxicillin, Z-Pak, and more. Each kit is backed by Dr. Peter McCullough. Ordering is simple. Just a few clicks and it's delivered to your door. Head to twc.health/CDM. And use code CDM to save up to $60 off plus free shipping. That's twc.health/CDM. And use code CDM to save up to $60 off plus free shipping right now.
If you haven't noticed, gold has reached a new high, all-time highs actually, and keeps going up every day. Why is that? It's because precious metals are a long-time historical store of value. And if you own a portfolio and you have assets in the fiat currencies, i.e. stocks, bonds, cash, or whatever, you're vulnerable to hyperinflation, which is coming as our debt explodes another trillion every 90 days. It's really scary. So how do you protect yourself? Go to Advisor Metals. If you look on any of our CDM.press sites, about halfway down, there's an ad for Advisor Metals. Click on it, fill out the form for your contact info, and Igor Bashatsky will contact you and talk to you. It's an easy conversation. There's no sales pitch. He's completely verified by us. He has a regulatory background we've checked into. We've checked with his bankers. We've checked with his IRA custodians for metals. And we can highly recommend Advisor Metals and ERA. So go to Advisor Metals. If you call them directly, tell them we sent you at CDM, and he'll definitely take care of you. But protect your portfolio, because you really need to. It's coming. Thank you.
All right, folks, we're back with Dr. Sheila Furey, who is the founder of the Medical Freedom Alliance in the Commonwealth of Virginia. She lives in Richmond. We're friends, full disclosure here. So Sheila, let's talk about the next thing that's happening. Last spring, around March, we started writing on CDM about the avian flu, because all of a sudden the WHO was talking about the avian flu and other pockets of the world. We know that there was a tracking methodology here in the United States of the dairy cattle since March, about the time that there were these international, you know, spottings of the avian flu. And then there was a conference. There's two conferences so far. The first one was in May. Let's talk about that one, because it's fascinating to me that these clowns think that they're going to be able to pull this again. The first one in May, where was it held?
It was Council of Foreign Relations, and I don't recall the exact location of that, but 47 states participated in this. And it was essentially, we have to be prepared now for the next pandemic of avian flu, and that we have to monitor our food supply, and particularly chickens and turkeys, and then also be aware of avian flu now moving into cows, dairy cows, and to cattle. And that one of the things that we have to increase our surveillance. And so talking about surveillance in airports, surveillance in wastewater, and that we have to be prepared for and have vaccines on hand so that we can do mass vaccination again. And we have to protect, in their mind, the farm workers and the people. So farm workers, what we need to do for anyone who works on a farm, exposed to a farm, a family living on a farm, anyone who would have contact with animals on a farm is at risk for this highly pathogenic avian flu.
And at that point in time in May, when they had this conference, how many avian flu cases connected to humans were there in the United States?
At that point, I think there were four. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it might have been four in the last 4 years. And that was not all in the United States. Okay.
Okay. So in the United States, what was it in May?
It was one.
Okay. So we're having this discussion with 330 million people in the United States. You know, at some point this gets to be almost like a Saturday Night Live script, because it's so stupid when you really think about it. 330 million plus people in the United States, and let's put the other, you know, 14 million because of the illegal aliens here. And we got one case of avian flu, and we're having a discussion with the Council of Foreign Relations, which backs the World Economic Forum. We all know this. And they're talking about lockdowns, they're talking about surveillance. And during that course in time, during that conversation, who's supposed to be paying for all this?
We, the tax dollars, of course.
Okay. And so at that point in time, am I correct when I say that I think that the Biden-Harris administration had declared an emergency youth authorization upon that? And that at that point in time, there was a manufacturing of an avian. And because of that, there was a manufacturing of avian flu shots, which I believe is now about 70 million. Is that right? That we have in a stockpile someplace?
Yes.
All right. And so this is based upon one case.
And it's conjunctivitis is the symptom that's so deadly. Okay, so you get pink eye essentially, and we're worried about the transmission of pink eye in farm workers. All right, and what they report though is they skew the data, and they said that there's a 50% mortality rate, And the work of Peter McCullough in investigating those cases makes it very clear. They're dying of bacterial pneumonia. They're not dying of the avian influenza, right? And so when you look back at these, and they're usually poor people who are dying, and those are poor people who are living with their animals, okay?
So sleeping with their animals, what, they're living in the barns?
Yes, because they're poor.
All right, so does that really have anything to do with the avian flu, or is that just having to do with, you know, filth?
Correct. So they're exposed to all kinds of things. These are people who had more than one illness. So people who have multiple comorbidities, all right, are not going to die of avian. They're going to die of the other illnesses. And this is one of the things that we saw over and over again in COVID, is that people were coming into the hospital. They were testing positive for COVID. And the hospital staff were not looking below the surface, and they weren't looking at, maybe they are testing positive for COVID, but maybe there's really something else going on here, because they're not coughing, they're not sneezing. Maybe we have something else going on. So underlying urinary tract infections were overlooked. Underlying cancers were overlooked. Underlying bacterial pneumonia was overlooked, because they didn't want to look that this might be, yes, you had, you know, test positive for COVID, but the real cause for inflammation in your illness is that you've got a bacterial or even a fungal pneumonia. All of that was overlooked by the mainstream medical community.
All right. So when this happened in May, what was the end of the conversation at that conference? Where did they leave that they were going to continue to monitor this, since they had started doing the tracking of the dairy and the chickens here in the United States since March of this year?
Yeah, so it's really important that we look behind every hay bale to test for avian flu. They wanted to go out far and wide and make sure that they were having an accurate account of any potential case of avian flu. So PCR testing on a large scale. And so
did we do that on every farm in America at that point?
No, we did not, because people are resistant to that. And they realize that, you know, if we go out and we order mass PCR testing, that people are going to resist that. So what they want to do, and what I learned in the most recent conference, is that we have to partner and warm ourselves up to the community again, because people are distrustful of the healthcare system.
As they should be distrustful, because they intentionally lied to the public. And, you know, and I'm one of these people, you lie, you know, it's sort of like you have no credibility left, because part of it has to do with the hospital administrators.
Yes.
It's not just the CDC. I know that Bobby Kennedy's talked about the agency capture. I agree with him on that. The CDC, the NIH, the NIAID, HHS, you know, FDA, all of that is captured by big pharma or by big agriculture at the Department of Agriculture. But we also have people who have their MBAs running hospitals these days. And in some cases, it's the MBA and an MD running the hospitals, but it's more for the profit side of it, which we've learned through the analysis of the COVID price gouging, as I call it, in the last 4 years. But how do we, when you went to that second conference a couple weeks ago, let's talk about who's in the room, because I think it's important for people to understand these are people from across the countries at more of a state level, county level. Describe just, you know, some titles to some of these people. So people know who to look at in their community. Some of them came from the Department of Health, right?
Correct. So they were, most of them were, you know, head of EMS for, you know, in the area of Raleigh-Durham, okay? Mm-hmm. People who ran the local health departments in New Haven, Connecticut, in Polk County, Florida, in Hidalgo, Texas, all right? In Fort Worth, Texas. So they're Sioux City, Iowa. Okay. So these are people who ran their local health departments, and they have just, you know, we're coming out of COVID, but now we have to look to how do we keep our community safe in the face of this highly pathogenic avian flu and alert people to the dangers, but also to the targeted audience, farmers and people who are working on farms. How do we get into those communities? How do we get them to trust us again and trust us and believe us that they need to right now get both a flu shot and a COVID shot to protect them from avian flu?
Now, all right, let me just stop you right there. First of all, flu shot and a COVID shot together may be dangerous for people.
Correct.
But for avian flu, you don't take a flu shot. You don't take a COVID shot. So why are they recommending a co and a flu?
So their rationale is that if you take a flu shot, it will mitigate the potential harm from avian flu. So
it's that crazy argument. If you take it, like they said for COVID, if you take it, it'll prevent you from getting sicker than you normally would, and you'll have a shorter time in the hospital if you have to go to a hospital and stay there for a while. It's a hypothetical question based upon air.
Correct.
All right. And I just have to ask you, when they have the breakout sessions and when you got to speak to some of these people, do these people actually believe this nonsense?
Absolutely.
Is it a sales pitch of how do we train you so that you can put the narrative out there? But do they sincerely believe this nonsense? Because that, to me, that tells me either they have no critical thinking, they're stupid, they're parrots, or they go along to it because they're paid for it.
So some of them are in business, and they're clearly there for the testing purposes. So the businesses in the room were, okay, we are going to provide the surveillance equipment to your community. So we're going to allow you to have surveillance of air quality. We're going to set up the water sewage surveillance in your community. And here's the package that we're going to sell your community for X million dollars. And then we'll do all the lab monitoring for you for another X million dollars. So there were clearly people who were there from that perspective. You know, how does that benefit my company? There were also people there who were from vaccine manufacturing companies.
Right? Do we have the same... Is it different pharmaceutical companies that manufacture avian flu shots?
Well, it would be in the long run, I think it would be the same ones. Okay. Mm-hmm. But these were people who were saying, okay, we're going to try to develop vaccines that as each new variant of illness comes through, we can very rapidly do a new vaccine in 3 to 6 months. And so we can keep injecting you with the latest and greatest vaccine every 6 months to prevent you from being ill, which is a complete falsehood.
Well, that is true. It's a complete falsehood, but most people don't know this. In September of 2021, around the same time that we had the breakthroughs at the end of August, end of July, from people who were having the shots, they got COVID afterwards. Okay, during that time period, September 2021, we obtained from the White House, Biden-Harris White House, that their policy is to have a mandated seasonal coronavirus for all of the coronaviruses that are transmissible to human beings. That's a fact. That's where they are. That's the Harris-Waltz policy going forward. Did they have a discussion about that in this room, about having seasonal coronavirus shots?
Well, that's accepted. That from their standpoint, this is fact. This is what you need to do. This is what's recommended from the CDC, the WHO. These are how we keep our people safe. And so they have bought that line of health, hook, line, and sinker. And again, what they wanted to emphasize is if the people are distrustful, we need to get into their faith communities, talk to their pastors and convince, you know, their priest, their rabbi, whoever, that they need to continue to participate for the health of the community by getting regular vaccines and doing what is necessary to keep, you know, the food supply as well as their community safe. So it's a bribery at every level. They were unabashed in talking about the bribery that went in to getting people to take COVID shots, giving away gift cards, having parties, putting them in. If your whole family got vaccinated, you'll go into a raffle for a trip to Florida. That's what I found really humorous. Okay, so we're going to send them to the state that's most free, all right, during COVID. But if you get all your get your entire family vaccinated, that's where we're going to send you, all right?
Well, and they also had a lottery. Governor DeWine in Iowa was the first governor to offer an opportunity. You got a shot to be, you know, get a chance to win the lottery.
Yeah.
So that happens. Now, that's a very interesting narrative, as I mentioned to you in the past, because I did eavesdrop on the Office of Faith-Based phone calls at the Biden White House starting in mid-February 2021 after he was inaugurated. Wasn't open to the press, folks, but I believe in God and I have a right to listen in, so I did. And I heard with my own ears that, in fact, the Office of Faith-Based was asking people, and this is mid-February 2021, they were asking thousands of people on this phone call. This is after the synagogues and the churches had been shut down for a year. They were asking them to the churches to host COVID events, meaning get the shots. And they actually said during that phone call that they wanted the faith-based leaders to get married to the Black community leaders, to get married to the union leaders. And these were unnamed unions at that point in time. We later found out that Randy Weingartner from the teachers union was talking to the CDC about putting masks on babies and things like that. But that took us until September of 2021 to figure that out. But they wanted these people in February of 2021 to host these church events because they were places of trust in the community. And they wanted to have them, quote unquote, validate the COVID vaccinations. Those are their words, not mine. So you see this again, ratcheting up and being repeated in the conference that you attended a couple weeks ago. That's interesting to me, Sheila, okay? Because that must have been a success for the rollout in 2021.
It absolutely was.
I want to repeat it.
And further, those churches that did rollouts also in Virginia, and I'm assuming across the country, got paid to do those clinics.
That's right.
And so the churches that had been, you know, may have suffered, you know, financial loss while they were locked down. Okay, now we're going to get $20,000 to $50,000 for every vaccine clinic we host. Okay, I'm in. Okay, that'll pay a few bills. And not looking at what impact that's really having on the community, and then dictating a false narrative, and then using this strong arm of moral superiority, and this is what God is asking you to do, and if you don't do it, you're being an amoral, or you know, you're not loving and caring and respectful of your neighbor. Okay, which is completely false and an unethical way to present this.
It is, you know, when you think about it, it takes a lot of nerve to do what they did, but it takes even more nerve when you have such a hesitancy. I understand now why they didn't want to recognize the vascular, the cardio, the neurological injuries in early 2021, and they still haven't for the vascular and neurological to date today in 2024. And that was to not create a vax hesitancy. They wanted everybody to get the shots because they didn't want to have a control group. They didn't want people to be who didn't take the shots to be compared to people who did, because they knew that the shots were not safe and effective for everybody. And they knew that it didn't prevent the transmissibility of COVID virus. So What do they think is going to happen now? Because I think when you and I discussed this off camera in the last couple of weeks, I think it's very interesting. You know, when people ask, why do we have so many migrants here in the United States? And I know that there are some people that think that they want it to be the gerrymandering and they want it to be for the voting. That doesn't land with me, with my experience. But what you said to me about the migrants being on the farms and the discussion, tell the audience about the discussion in the room about using the illegal migrants as a venue to get into people's homes with their domestic pets. Because I think that's fascinating.
So one of the things that they want is they wanted to get the undocumented community, as they referred to them. Mm-hmm. And they acknowledged in this alarming number. So 20,000 undocumented in different communities. And that was probably a low estimate. All right. So how do we get into these communities in particular so that we can vaccinate everyone in their community? All right. And so they
who's legal and who's American citizens?
No, these were all people in this country who were not here legally.
All right.
And so they originally said we put out flyers saying that we were offering free vaccines. And the people were hesitant because they were non-citizens and they figured it was only free to citizens. And so they had to go back to these communities and say, no, you don't have to be a citizen. We will, no matter what you are, why you're here, we're going to give you the shots because, you know, they're safe and effective and we want everyone to have those. So this gave them an inroad into the community. We can give you a flu shot. We can give you a COVID shot. We can give your children, if you have children with you, all of their childhood vaccine schedule. We can then, if they were working on a farm, how do we keep track of you? All right. So they get their cell phone numbers. If they've been on a farm, it's a farm that they're following, then they have regular phone calls with them, text messages. They learn that sometimes that the cell phone is shared by multiple people. So they would track who is sharing that phone. All right. And so all of this is data gathering. And it's data gathering on who they are, where they're going, what they're exposed to. And I'm sure if it's, you know, tracking, you know, the cell phone signals and where it is in the community, where it goes, all of that is happening. And that all of this is all under the umbrella of this is what we're going to do in order to keep you safe and effective and have a job on a farm.
So this is all under the conversation of this avian flu that they say is occurring now. So when you attended this conference 2 weeks ago, how many cases of avian flu in humans are here in the United States?
I mean, there's still not over 10. We're still under 5, I believe. Yeah, there's not been this huge increase. And again, what we're seeing and the symptoms are you get conjunctivitis. They aren't getting severe respiratory illness. They're also, the other thing that they're tracking is in hospitals.
Why do they think this is so deadly if you get pink eye?
Because they have these other cases, which they're saying there was a 50 in the almost 900 cases that have occurred over the last, you know, 20 to 50 years. Okay. There's been a 50% mortality rate. So again, what they're looking at is they're not looking at the comorbidities that these individuals had. And what Peter McCullough says is that they weren't dying of avian flu. They were dying of other illnesses. And so what we saw with the COVID issue is the people were dying of other things and it wasn't necessarily COVID, or it was COVID that they allowed to progress to such a level because they were denying early treatment.
Or they were putting people on the ventilators, and when they said resuscitate my loved one, some doctor put on, you know, do not resuscitate on the chart. I mean, right. You know, the whole thing was screwed up. We're about to run out of time here in the next 3 minutes or so, Sheila, but what's your takeaway that people need to watch now? I mean, obviously the Emergency Use Act is there as of spring here in the United States for avian flu. We know that the European digital passport is moving ahead, unfortunately, with these crooks over at, in Brussels at the EU. We know that there's a stockpile of about 70 million shots for avian flu here in the United States. Have there been any clinical trials? Did they say if they've tested these on people? So they haven't. So are they expecting to roll it out? Well, I know that when Todd, our colleague, was reporting on the international side of the avian flus last spring, and it was interesting at the time because, I mean, it was from Burma. It was from places, you know, in Asia. And then there were some that were in South America, I think, and then also there were in Europe. But my question is this. Do they say that it's going to happen soon, that they're going to push this out, you know, after the election, before the first of the year? I know that I went back to some of our sources who were part of the Fauci crowd and said to them back in the spring, so what is there to this avian flu? And he said it was going to probably hit us in the late fall, early winter. What did you hear inside that room?
I did not hear that. And I think that this was probably because these were pretty low level individuals. They were more at the local state level than pulling the strings at the UN or other WHO, other things. So I think these are the responders. These are the boots on the ground. We're going to tell you what to do and you follow orders. And we're going to make sure that you have plenty and infrastructure that can handle what we tell you to do when we tell you to do it.
So what do you think is going to happen next?
So I am hesitant to say I don't know what's going to happen. But what I do know is that I think there are enough people who are waking up. And if we begin to say no to the medical establishment, and more people say, no, you're not going to do that, that this movement is spreading. And I think if we can, and if we're going to liken it to anything, if we go back to Vietnam and the college students who began protesting the Vietnam War, we need to be that force of a movement nationwide that our young people, our college campuses are going to say, no, we're not going to comply. Enough is enough. You know, you've already taken 4+ years of our life. You're not going to take one more day.
Or one more hour or one more nanosecond.
Yes.
Sheila, thank you for joining us today. We're going to monitor this and we're going to have you back. And thank you for going to the conference and, pardon me, keeping abreast of this. Because it's important, folks, okay? Avian flu, we're going to continue to report on it. Keep your eyes out there. Because obviously it's coordinated because they had to. One, we know that they're monitoring it since March, you know, with the dairy cows and the chickens and the birds and everything here in the United States on the farms. We know that there's a stockpile of 70 million avian flu shots. They haven't been clinically tried, but, you know, they have it in the stockpile someplace. We know that there's a conference last May. We know that there's a conference in October. And we know that they're getting people ready and educating them, putting the fear of God in them, and doing this, repeating some of the same model that they did with COVID with the Black community leaders, the church leaders, and the unions on the local level. Sheila, thank you. We'll have
you
back.
Thank you.